Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on harvesting rainwater when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on the planet. But today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export. Then we turn around and we find that our grapes are imported from Chile, our tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply here in the United States is in the hands of foreigners. It's in the hands of multinational corporations who support this Global 2000 population reduction program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Now, back in 1940, all of us had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. Today, we're down to a three-day supply in our refrigerators, and now we've been taught to believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. But over the past 60 years, we've traded a one-year food supply in our own pantry in our own homes for a three-day supply on the Walmart shelf. Now, these Global 2000 mad scientists and philosophers and preachers and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. So they tell us out of the Club of Rome. Now, these evil madmen with their Global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause. And then that's you and I live for our cause. Now, let me show you from the scripture how to live and be a survivor instead of a dead victim. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's a place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the biblical law in general. And it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, I'll give it to you. It's 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or just click onto the email. Click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about harvesting rainwater. Sounds kind of preposterous, sounds kind of crazy. You know, if you're living in Manhattan, you're sitting there saying, well, this guy's some kind of a lunatic fringe. You should turn over and listen to acid rock. Now, for the rest of us, let's talk about something that's intelligent for a change. You know, they've got drought in the West for 10 years. You got drought down in the Southeast, and it's unheard of. I got news for you, kids. You got more drought coming. And the reason I can tell you that with authority is because the God of creation, the creator of the universe, says he's going to send more drought. More of it. Global warming is not your problem. It's the violation of the Ten Commandments. It's the violation of the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. The problem is the breach of contract. See, we got a contract in full force and effect here, and we violated the terms and conditions of the contract. And we're going into a period of foreclosure. Foreclosure. Can you say foreclosure, boys and girls? Can you say penal clause? Penal clause? Punishment? Can you say punishment, boys and girls? No, I don't make it this way. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to report the facts. And hell, that drought's been going on down there in the Southeast now for a year or two. And the people who are used to getting, you know, 30, 40, 50 inches of rain a year are now getting half that. And they're down there crying the blues. And so I thought, well, you know, I can't make it rain anymore, you know, on Nashville, Tennessee, than what it's going to rain. You know, God is out of control. Yeah, let me tell you that one again. The God of heaven is out of control. There isn't any way that you and I can control that guy. You know, he's free, white, and 21. The guy can just kind of do as he pleases. And I'm not going to change him in any way. Not that I need to or even want to, but, you know, he's got an agenda. And there isn't anybody that's going to change his agenda. That's what our problem is. Now, Al Gore, I think, has it in his mind that he's going to fix God's agenda. He's written a couple of books now on this thing called global warming. Won a Nobel Prize, I saw the other day. And he says, what we got to do is quit burning all this coal, and we got to make all these changes over here. They've got an agenda. These globalists now have an agenda. They want to put a dollar a gallon tax on gasoline. First thing they got to do is they got to create an emergency. They got to create this terrible problem so that they can come up with a solution. So they did. And they did a false flag operation on the Twin Towers there in New York. And then they knocked those two buildings down, blamed it on the Arabs, and then they got us persuaded that we needed to go to war against the Arabs. Our problem isn't with the Arabs, our problem is with our politicians. So anyway, you know, that's a done deal. I'm not going to change the war in Iraq, but I just wanted to point out to you that that's the way they do that. Now, what they want to do is they want to put a dollar a gallon tax on gasoline. Well, hell, you people aren't going to sit still for that. Hell, you'd vote them out of office. So what they need to do is come up here with a bad problem. Bad problem. Global warming. So they'll go out here and say, well, now look at what this global warming is doing. It's causing all this drought down here, you know. And so what we got to have is a solution. We got to have a dollar a gallon tax so that we can convert from coal to something else. And so, you know, when it gets bad enough, you people, well, I guess that's what we got to do. Got to do what you got to do. So they'll want to build bigger and bigger projects, and that's where the money's at. Building big dams is where all the money's at. But I've been reporting to you that there's a better solution for you and me. I'm not going to change Congress's desire to move the Columbia River and divert the water, you know, from Astoria, Oregon to Atlanta, Georgia. I'm kind of kidding you here in a way. I'm not sure that that's a feasible project, but if there's an engineer out there, if there's a company, if there's a politician, and if they can funk it up, they'll do it, you know, as long as there's tax money involved and as long as there's profits. But our problem isn't in getting Columbia River water to Atlanta, Georgia. Our problem is in conserving the water that we have in Atlanta, Georgia, and using it. And the best solution to that is for us to sit down, shut up, and start listening to our God a little more. We used to have a God in this country. Today we got about 50. We used to have one. Now we got about 50. We've been following all these gods all over. And they're promising us everything. Hillary Clinton's running around out here promising to give us everything that God never even thought of. And then she's going to do it all free. You don't have to pay any taxes. I don't know. And I'll leave that to you politicos out there. Meanwhile, back here on the farm, we got this real bad problem. And I told you about a guy named Fury, P-H-I-R-I. And I call him Mr. Fury. He's actually got some other African names over there. But, you know, God, I have trouble enough pronouncing Davis and Smith, you know, let alone Zimbabwe, or something like that. So I'll leave that to Katie Couric and the paid professionals who went to college and have letters after their names. And I'll just call this guy Mr. Fury. Now, this guy is a phenomenon. He's a black guy, just like that Professor Watley. He's also a black guy. So for all you black people out there, I want to give you credit where credit's due, because those two black guys have come up with a revolutionary idea. Revolutionary idea. And it's how do we make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less? Now, white guys can't play basketball, and white guys can't farm either, but these two black guys can. And they've come up with revolutionary ideas that work down here at the Joe Sixpack level. And that's the thing that caught my attention. This is something that I can do on my own farm. And I can benefit myself and my family without paying any taxes and without building some great Central American project to deliver water from here to there that costs billions of dollars and makes a lot of employment. And I'm sure that's all good stuff, but, you know, it doesn't solve my problem. And it sure as hell ain't going to solve your problem down in Atlanta, Georgia, because if building the Tennessee Valley Authority was going to solve all your water problems, you people in Tennessee should be drowning in water. And instead of drowning, you're dying from thirst. Now, there's something wrong there when you spend billions and billions of dollars on these great water projects and then you ain't got no water. Now, this guy Fury didn't spend any billions of dollars and he's got more water than he knows what to do with, living in a damn desert, for crying out loud. Now, if a guy can live in a desert and have more water than he knows what to do with, we ought to listen to the guy, don't you think? And so I've been reporting to you. Last time I reported that Mr. Fury has created the Garden of Eden. He recreated the Garden of Eden in the desert for himself and his own family. Now, this guy Fury, you know, people come to him and say, well, Mr. Fury, would you give us a tree so that we can go plant it on our ground? And so Fury gives these people trees and slips and stuff, and they go take it and they plant it, and it dies. Of course it dies. Plant a banana tree in the desert and it'll die. And then here's what he says. He says, the abundant food and fruit that Mr. Fury produces is anything but bitter. He's been generous with his abundance. He gives away a diverse array of trees to anyone who wants them. Unfortunately, as Mr. Fury points out, the majority of the trees that he gives away die when people do not implement rainwater harvesting techniques before they plant, because the land must harvest water to give to the trees. So before you plant trees, you must plant the water. Mr. Fury propagates his trees in old rice and grain bags near one of three hand-dug wells near the bottom of his property. The soil is Mr. Fury's catchment tank, and it is vast, and in times of drought, his distant neighbor's wells go dry. Even those that are deeper than Mr. Fury's, their wells are all going dry. Yet, as Mr. Fury says, my wells always have water into which I can dip my finger. And this is due both to the particular hydrologic, geologic conditions of his site, and because he is putting far more water into the soil than he takes out. Mr. Fury puts more water into the soil than he's taking out. God, that's a wild new concept. Now, here in the United States, we have a reservoir. It's called the Ogla Reservoir. It's an underground reservoir of water. And God, it's humongous. It covers, 7, 8, 9, 10 states. states. I mean, this thing is thousands and thousands of square miles of size. And so you drill up, you know, back in the 1930s, you know, somebody woke up, you know, there was a drought at the time, and there was a dust bowl here, so some guy got the idea, let me dig a hole in the ground, and he dug a well, and he came up with water. So look at that. And so here in the United States, we've been drilling these wells into the aquifer, you know, reservoir aquifer, until we have now mined more water out of the aquifer than is going in. And so the aquifer is going dry, and in many locations around the aquifer, it's gone dry, and so they can't irrigate anymore. So the land has turned back to the desert. Now, it wasn't desert when we started, but we have turned it into a desert through our poor agricultural practices. Instead of practicing the agricultural laws of the Bible, we have practiced the agricultural laws of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and now we are simply reaping the results of it. That's all. Now, as an illustration, you know, when you take a look at San Diego, California, you get 10 inches of rain a year there. 10 inches of rain a year is more than enough for you people to live right there in San Diego County, harvesting the rainwater. In other words, if San Diego were to declare itself sovereign and independent from the rest of the United States of America, and you couldn't get any water from any other source than what fell right there on San Diego County, you people in San Diego County could make it on 10 inches a year. You could. Mr. Fury does. In fact, this guy Fury over here, he's propagating trees on his land. He's growing banana trees in the desert, and he doesn't have any problem at all. He's got plenty of water. That's because he's saving all the rainwater that falls on his ground. And now people come to him and they look at him and say, how do you do that? And so he says, well, I'm just out here harvesting rainwater and doing my thing. Can we have one of your trees to plant over in our ground? He says, well, yeah, you can have one of my trees here. Let me give it to you free of charge. They take it over, they plant it, and the damn thing dies. Well, of course it dies, and getting rain, and getting water. There isn't any more rain falling on their ground next door to Mr. Fury than is falling on his ground. But you can't grow a banana tree in Wichita, Kansas. But you can grow a banana tree in Wichita, Kansas if you irrigate it. Hell, they grow, listen to this, redwood trees take a lot of rain. And redwood trees grow on the Pacific coast of California and then Humboldt and Del Norte, Mendocino counties. And you can take those redwood trees and you can transplant them and you can grow them around the world. Hell, they got those trees growing in China. They got them growing in Hawaii. They got them growing in Fresno, California. Now get this, Fresno, California is let me look at Fresno here, 10.6 inches of rain a year. Redwood trees won't grow where it rains 10 inches a year. So you got to irrigate it. So you got to put water on. Now, you know, there's redwood trees all over Fresno, California. I was driving around there one time, and I was amazed at how many redwood trees have been transplanted down there. Redwoods are a California tree, but, you know, California is pretty much a desert. And now, here's the moral to the story. This guy, Fury, over here, has come up with a plan. He followed the biblical plan, the biblical laws. And he's only getting 12 to 20 inches a year. And, hell, he's got a Garden of Eden there. Now, I don't know how much it rained there in the Garden of Eden, but down in the southeastern United States, you see, we became a bunch of spoiled brats. I'm one of them. I'm not throwing darts at you. I'm a spoiled brat. Hell, it rains 50 inches a year here. But in the last few years, it hasn't been raining 50 inches. And that God that's out of control is withholding the rain. I showed you that a little earlier. You know, our God told us, now, if you don't pay attention to me, I'm going to withhold the rain. I'm going to send drought upon you. And that's what he's doing. Al Gore says, oh, no, now it's global warming. And here's God comes along and says, well, give me some credit. I'm going to shut up the heavens and turn your heavens to iron and your earth to brass and send you drought and powder until you be destroyed from off the earth. And so Al Gore comes along and says, oh, no, don't believe him. You're doing it with global warming. You're doing it by burning coal in your coal-fired power plants. We need to make a shift over here, and we need a dollar a gallon gas tax over here to make the shift. And you can choose for yourself who you want to believe. I don't care. But this guy, Mr. Fury, now over here has a desert location that he's turned into the Garden of Eden. People are coming to him from all over the world saying, show us how you're doing that. And this guy Lancaster did that. Brad Lancaster went over there and he says, hey, let me take a look at what you're doing. He wrote a book. It's called Harvesting Rainwater. And then I say, you need a copy of his book. So let me tell you where to get it. I think I got this from the West Plains health food store. It's published by Rain Source Press. Get it down. Rain Source Press, Tucson, Arizona. Now, they've got a website. It's www.harvestingrainwater.com. Harvestingrainwater.com. Try that. Now, they've also got an address. And it's Rainwater Press. No, it's called Rain Source Press. Rain Source Press. 813 North 9th Avenue, Tucson, Arizona. 813 North 9th Avenue, Tucson, Arizona. Zip code 85705. The zip 85705. Well, 8 trees, 40 foot tall, and 6 to 8 inches in diameter, 3,479 gallons of water, 1,399 kilowatt hours of electricity, 383 pounds of solid waste, 753 pounds of greenhouse gases. Rain Source Press made this paper choice because our printer Thompson Shore Incorporated is a member of Green Press Initiative, a nonprofit program dedicated to supporting authors, publishers, and suppliers in their efforts to reduce their use of fiber obtained from endangered forests. So these guys are Green Press Initiative. These guys are greenies. You know, Rush Limbaugh, you know, he cranks up his chainsaw and boom, says, let's go cut some trees. When God designed this operation here, he told us to dress and keep it. That's our marching orders, dress and keep the garden. Now, he didn't tell us we couldn't cut the trees down, but, you know, our common sense ought to come into play here. And when we cut a tree down, we ought to go out and plant two more. So where I'm from in California, they've got what they call tree farms. And so the logging companies, you know, when they cut down trees now, they go back and farm them again. Down in the southeastern United States, they farm trees. And they go in there and they cut the trees off, and then they go back and replant them. So as you're looking around, you'll see in Washington, Oregon, Georgia, and Florida, and, you know, places where they farm, they grow trees. They actually farm and grow trees just like a crop. Now, by doing that, we regenerate our forests. Unfortunately, around the world, we haven't learned that. And so we're cutting down the trees, like in the Amazon basin. You go out there and they cut down 4,000 square miles of trees every year. Sounds kind of wasteful. Well, if they go back and replant 4,000 square miles of trees every year, you know, every 100 years, you'd have the forest regenerated, wouldn't you? Well, unfortunately, we're not doing that. Well, we're not doing that in our cities and suburbs. Everywhere you go, we're paving everything over. And then we get out here in the suburbs, and we rely upon these great water projects to deliver our water. And now we're finding that the great water projects, you know, that our politicians gave us, are failing us. And so down in Georgia, for instance, they're getting water rationing because the lake where they get their water for the city of Atlanta is at about half or less. And they tell us in 2 years the damn thing's going to be dry. At the rate you people are using that water, that thing's going to be dry. And here's the crazy part of it. There's enough rain at 25 inches a year falling on Atlanta, Georgia to furnish all of your water needs. But what you're doing, you're collecting the water into the reservoir that you're pumping out of in this humongous project, you know, that costs millions of dollars and takes engineers and great public works projects to deliver the water to your tap. See? And here's the crazy part of it. There's enough rain falling out of the sky to furnish all the needs that you've got there in the Atlanta metro area, falling right on the city, to furnish all of your needs. And you've got your lots and all of your land there designed and graded to drain it all off into the ocean so that you can rely upon these huge public works projects. Now you got a drought down there, see? You got this drought. And in the midst of this drought, your public works projects won't deliver the water that you need, which is exactly what Mr. Feary discovered, you know, 30 years ago. He said, well, we can build these great big dams down in the low spots, but you need to collect your water on the high spot so that gravity will deliver it to where you want it. Now, that's a pretty novel idea. Instead of building great public works projects that require electricity and pumps to pump water, why don't we use our heads, put the little dams and reservoirs in to collect the water? We'll collect five times as much as we need. Then we can direct it where we want it by gravity flow. And once we get the thing built, then we don't have to work anymore. Now, in case you think that this guy, Feary, is some kind of a Superman, everything he did on his 7.4 acres, and most of you people listening to me right now do not own 7 acres of ground. You don't have seven. You've got a third of an acre. You got a half an acre. You got 1 acre. Maybe you got 2 or 3 acres. And that's where most Americans live. They got a little place out here in the countryside, in the suburbs. And if you got a big lot in the suburbs, hell, you may have an acre. Hell, maybe you got 5 acres. And this guy's got seven. He did the whole thing on his 7 acres of ground, which, you know, I'm just telling you, you know, as a farmer, 7 acres is, hell, my fields are bigger than 7 acres. Farmers normally have 20-acre fields. So, and some farmers, you know, like out in Nevada, their fields are counted by sections. I was up there at Wayne Hage's one time, and I'm looking at their hay field. It's 640 acres. That's their hay field. I mean, hell, that's a square mile. Hell, that's bigger than farms here in the Midwest. His crummy hay fields are bigger than our farms. Anyway, leaving that aside, we little guys down here, depending upon the municipal water district to deliver our water to us so that we can irrigate our trees and irrigate our lawns and so on, you know, pretty soon when the big public water works projects fail us, then they got to send out the water police. And you're sitting out there saying, well, wringing your hands, you're like, hey, well, I guess I got to stand in line and share the shortage with everybody else because they can't deliver the water to us. We're having this drought. And then your governor down here in Georgia leads this public prayer down here, you know. You drive God out of your schools. You drive the Bible out of your schools, dummies. And then you pray to God to deliver water? Have you people lost your minds? You Bible Belt Baptists, have you gone stark raving mad? You give God the finger and then pray and say, send us rain? Why don't you try that with your dad sometime? I never did do this. I never went crazy. But could you picture this? You walk up to your daddy, you give him the finger, tell him to go to hell, and say, "Dad, by the way, give me my allowance so I can go to the movies." Huh? That's what they do down in the Southeast. That's for all you irreligious people. You know, all you nut fruitcakes out in California? Listen to this. The people down here in the Southeast, they all go to church. They're religious people, you know. And they believe in God. Instead of evolution, they believe in God. So they give God the finger. See, they won't practice the Sabbath. There's a law that requires them that they practice the Sabbath. They won't do that. They all practice Sunday. That's because they're sun worshipers. And then they're out here, you know, where normal people, you know, like a truck driver is dinging a lot lizard in the back lot of the Husky station. These guys are dinging their secretaries like this guy, Jim Baker. Jim Baker, you know, he's married to Tammy Faye, that woman, you know, that had all that makeup on her. Anyway, this Jim Baker, religious guy, evangelist, he's on the air right now. He's back. He went to prison for a few years. He's back on the air, stealing money from widows and orphans like he always did. Anyway, when he was married to Tammy Faye, he was dinging his secretaries. And these are the kind of people that are preaching in the churches. They're what we call hypocrites. Or as old Samuel Clemens used to say, Mark Twain, damn hypocrites. Well, anyway, down here in the South, you know, they got a drought going on. And so the governor the other day, I saw him on TV, he comes out and he's praying to Jesus. "Oh, God, won't you send us rain?" I don't know, kids. You know, some people have their heads up the wrong end for extended periods of time. So I thought I would report to you, for those of you that still have some semblance of common sense left, living down here in the drought area, and I pointed this out, you know, time and time again, you got plenty of rain coming down out of the sky, plenty of it, more than you need. But you dummies, you're channeling it all off, you're draining it away. Now let's start thinking for a change. Instead of draining the water off of our property, let's put a dike around our property and save it all. Now, in order for us to save it all, we got to have a logical system for doing that, because, you know, when you get one of these gully washer rains, 2 inches comes down, hell, you'll be flooded out. You'll have water in your basements and every place else. So you got to have a way, a methodology. You got to have a modality for taking the gully washer rains. Now, they have what they call monsoons over here in Africa. It comes off the Indian Ocean. Monsoon. Can you say monsoon, boys and girls? That's when it rains a whole bunch. So this guy not only lives in a desert, but he gets these torrential rains. I mean, this guy gets the worst of both worlds. It doesn't just rain a little bit and soak into the ground. When it rains 2 inches in 30 minutes, like it did here the other day. And he has to collect all that water and save it. And so he has a modality for doing that. Now, here in America, we have a modality for doing that, too. We call it Grand Coulee Dam. Hoover Dam. We call it Glen Canyon Dam. When we collect water, boys and girls, here in this country, I mean, we do it in a big way at the low spots. And then we pump it uphill. No. The way you do it here, you collect it in a lot of little dams at the high end, and you let gravity deliver it free without pumps and electricity to the low spots. That's the wild new innovation. Came from a black man. I thought we white guys over here were the engineers and the smart people. We build our dams in the low spots and pump the water uphill. This black guy puts little dams on the high spots and lets gravity deliver it downhill. Doesn't cost him anything. Tuck that one away in your hearts. And then he gives trees away to his neighbors who aren't as smart as he is. And then they plant the trees in the desert and they all die because they haven't got enough water. And then they look over at this guy who doesn't get any more rain than they do. And then his trees are all growing. And they're all scratching their heads saying, "We don't understand it. We can't figure it out." That's why I told you this book now is going to explain it to you. It's Harvesting Rainwater for Drylands, written by Brad Lancaster, who went over to Africa so he could learn from this black guy over in Zimbabwe who lives in the desert. All right, now you got that? All right, now there's 8 rainwater harvesting principles. And I want to tell you what these are, these 8 rainwater harvesting principles. But before I do that, I got to remind you and the FCC and everybody else that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we are open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs, all, 2,500 of them now, are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give out, do not mean that those authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour have become offended by listening to this program. So they become hostile. Sometimes they're political. Sometimes they're religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed now by us here at the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, you can call us here direct. The number is 417-273-4967, or you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All right, we are reviewing the book. It's called Harvesting Rainwater. Sounds kind of crazy off the top of your head, but this is the solution in drought areas for little people like you and me. Now, you know, the government comes along, and they want to sell us these big projects, and they want to sell us rationing, stand in line, share the shortage. Well, if you're living in San Diego, California, and there's a drought, and if you're living in Tucson, if you're living in Atlanta, Georgia, there's a drought, and the water authority is telling you, you know, you got to cut back on irrigating your lawn and stuff like that, you can do it if you want to. And you'll probably do it because you have to. But you could learn how to be water independent in a drought area and tell them to go to hell in a handbasket if you're so inclined. Now, if you think this costs millions of dollars, I want to point out to you, this little black guy in Africa doesn't have a rototiller, doesn't have a car, doesn't have very much money, or at least he didn't. I don't know what he's got now. And so he had to do this with all hand tools. He didn't have tractors and grading equipment and Laterno earth-moving equipment, you know, to contour his land. He's got a little plot of ground, 7 acres. So, you know, you're sitting on a third of an acre. You're sitting on a half an acre. You got 2 acres, 3 acres. You can do this with hand tools. You don't have to have. Now, most of us have rototillers. I mean, hell, you know, I got tractors and rototillers. I've got old Bob Hart over here. I can call backhoe in here if I want to. And I can do things because I got a couple of bucks. Now, most of us Americans, you know, we got a couple of bucks in our jeans, a couple of nickels to rub together. I mean, you know, if you got money to spend, you know, on things like automatic sprinkler systems, you know, those cost thousands of dollars to put in an automatic sprinkler system in your lawn. Now, you know, if you got money to do that, you got money to do this harvesting rainwater thing, because these guys that are doing this, you know, over in Africa, they don't have any money. They don't have any rototillers. They don't have underground sprinkler systems, you know, automatically set, you know, so that they come on at 5 o'clock in the morning, go off at 7, all that kind of crap. Automatic water saving. You know, they sell this stuff, and I call it water saving devices. Hell, these people don't even know how to collect water, much less save it. That's what we're talking about. Now, there's 8 of these rainwater harvesting principles over here, so I'm going to share a couple, 3 of them with you maybe, and to give you an idea about, does this guy really know what he's talking about? Mr. Feary's story is a wonderful example of a successful integrated rainwater harvesting system. You can see Chapter 4 for an urban example, that of my brother and myself. Now, in Chapter 4, I've already read that one to you in Program Number 1. That's where you're living in Tucson, Arizona, and you contour your land to collect all the water that falls on your ground. And you keep it all for yourself, and you don't let any of it run off into the street and down the storm drain. Talk about a selfish pig now. Can you believe this? I mean, this guy collects all the water off of the roof of his house and channels it onto his own trees and doesn't let any of it run down the storm drain. You know, if this guy can do it on his acre, you can do it on your acre. And then get this, in San Diego, California, you only get 10 inches a year. Sacramento, you people only get 17 inches a year. Fresno, 10 inches a year. Long Beach, 12 inches a year. Los Angeles, 12. And you can do it in Los Angeles. You people in Los Angeles, everybody that lives in that Los Angeles basin, there's enough rain at 12 inches a year to satisfy all the needs of all you people there. Isn't that amazing? Falling right out of the sky. And you got all this water coming in from the Colorado River, drilling wells, and there's wringing their hands. Oh, my God, I don't know what we're going to do for water next month. Hell, folks, for those of you in the rest of the world, they got a water system out in California. I got to digress here for a second. They got a water system out there that just defies description. You just can't believe this. You probably won't. They're pumping water. California is a long state. It's about, I don't know, 700, 800 miles long. then most of the people in the state of California live south of the Tehachapi Mountains, which is in the last third of the state. So they live down here in the lower third. And then most of those people live over on the coast. And so they got this big basin called the Los Angeles Basin. And from about, I don't know, Santa Barbara south, probably all the way to San Diego by now. But back in the 50s when I was flying airplanes up and down the coast there, I'd be flying my airplane. I get to Santa Barbara and it's a solid city from Santa Barbara, 120 miles to Laguna Beach. Just one great big long 120 mile long strip city. I haven't done that for years, but I'll bet you that strip city must run all the way to San Diego by now. My God, that must be 200 miles long. And then as far east as you can see from your airplane is all solid city, you know, clear over to the mountains. You can't see the mountains. Of course, they're only over there about 10, 15 miles because they got so much smog and pollution down there on a clear day. You can't see more than 10 miles. That's on a clear day. You can see 10 miles. On a bad day, you're on IFR. You have to be flying on instrument flight rules, you know, most of the time to fly through there. It's so bad. But anyway, these people down here have a water project that comes from San Francisco, California, about 300 or 400 miles north. And they have channeled that water. I mean, they're taking water out of the Sacramento River, for crying out loud, that ends in San Francisco Bay. They've got water coming out of the Sacramento River, San Joaquin. By now, the San Joaquin River must be running backwards. Backwards. But anyway, they got this water in these humongous irrigation ditches, runs down here to a mountain range called the Tehachapi Mountains. Then they pump a river. They pump a river over the mountains down into the basin. I don't know how much that thing cost. It was billions of dollars back when money had some value. Today it might cost $1 trillion. I don't know. Money doesn't have any value today, but when they were building it back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I guess 70s, I guess they started building that thing. When money had a little value, it was billions of dollars then, and it is a marvel, no doubt about it. But now, listen. After they got through spending all this money on this marvel, they're in a drought, and they ain't got enough water, which is the moral to this rainwater harvesting book. Hey, folks, you're collecting the water at the low end. When I read this book, it says, collect the water at the high end so that you can use gravity to distribute it. I thought, oh, my God, how come nobody thought of that before? Instead of pumping the water, why don't you get the water out of the sky? There's enough water falling on San Diego to furnish the needs for everybody down there. But they drain all that water into the ocean, and then they build billion-dollar projects to deliver water from Sacramento, California, for crying out loud. I tell you, troops, we have taken leave of our senses. Now, I didn't think of it either, so I don't want to be the guy that comes along and says, boy, we're really dumb. But I want to be the guy that comes along and says, God, I can't believe I was that dumb. Honest to God, I'm sitting here dumbfounded. I didn't know that there was enough water. I thought that 10 inches of rain falling in San Diego wasn't enough water, and we had to go to Sacramento and take your water away from you people up in Sacramento. Hell, you ain't got much more up there as it is. And now come to find out, this guy says, oh, no, there's plenty of water. 10 inches of rain a year will satisfy all your needs. So if you've got an acre down in San Diego County, there's enough rain falling on your ground to take care of all your needs, 10 inches a year. The thing is, you got to save it all. And this guy, this Mr. Fury, he has to collect rain in the monsoon when it dumps inches at a time. Now, he's only getting 20 inches a year in a good year. So when it drops 2 or 3 inches in this humongous rainfall, he has to collect all of it. He can't let that run off. And then when it rains, you know, 0.2 inch, he needs to collect that. So it doesn't rain. I mean, so it doesn't run off. So he came up with these 8 rainwater harvesting principles over here. There is no one standardized design for rainwater harvesting. So this isn't some kind of a science that you get out of a book. You got to learn how to do this and then go out and do it on your place. Every piece of land, the plants and animals that are upon it, and those who steward it are unique. Your 1 acre of ground, wherever it's located, is unique. There's probably no other piece of ground just exactly like it. So each site must be approached with its own distinctive characteristics in mind. However, there are 8 rainwater harvesting principles that are applicable to every site, and they should always be followed. And each one is valuable on its own, but you get the full benefit only if you use all of them together. So you've got 8 things here you got to learn to gather the rainwater. Number one, start at the top. When I saw that, I said to myself, how could something be that simple and we all missed it? Boys and girls, you start at the top. Water runs downhill. Hell, I'm a plumber. You know, there's 2 basic principles in plumbing. Water runs downhill and payday's on Friday. 2 basic principles. If you want to be a plumber, 2 things you have to learn. Water runs downhill. Payday is on Friday. All right, so anytime we go out to a site, you know, all of us plumbers, you know, we use our sophisticated technologies and transit and so on. To start the water flow at the top, that's where the toilet tank is, which then flows into the toilet bowl, which then flows out through the toilet trap, and downhill off of and out of your house, and then out into the sewer. So the sewer line is out in the middle of the street, and it runs downhill. Now, I knew that. So then what in the hell are we gathering water up in San Francisco for and then pumping it over the top of the Tehachapi Mountains when we've got the rain falling on Los Angeles already? Well, that's because that great engineering project up there made a lot of money for somebody and a lot of people. And the last thing we want you people in Los Angeles to be doing down there is collecting your own rainwater. Do you know what this would mean? Think about this for a second. If you people down there, any one of you, or two of you, or five or ten, collected the rainwater that's falling on your own ground and made yourselves water independent, and here you are with a green lawn, and here comes the water cop saying, well, my God, all of the rest of the lawns on this block are parched and dry, and yours is green, therefore you must be irrigating your lawn. Therefore, you must be in violation of the water law. And then you say, oh, no, sir, I don't even have a water meter. I'm not even hooked up to the water system. That's where this guy Fury is. Hey, I'm not suffering from a water shortage. Now, that's because every piece of ground now is unique. So, rainwater harvesting principle number one begins with the long and thoughtful observation. You put on your rain clothes, get on your raincoat, take your umbrella. Next time it's raining and you walk outside. See, most of us, when it rains, we go inside. No. You can't harvest rainwater watching the edge of night sitting on your sofa in the living room in a rainstorm. You got to get outside where it's raining and watch where the water drains. And if you're an urbanite, suburbanite, living here in the United States, your water drains downhill off of your property, onto the street, and down the storm drain. And we're going to have to stop that. So Mr. Fury was not taught by experts or by schools. He didn't go to college. He learned from the long and thoughtful observation of his own land, something that everyone can do. When he began, his land was dry. It was eroded. It was unproductive. But he was attentive to and he mimicked the aspects of his lands that were working, including rocks and plants found in informal rows perpendicular to the slope where they slowed the rainwater and infiltrated into the soil. Mr. Fury mimicked this by tucking his water harvesting structures perpendicular to the slope around existing vegetation, placed at locations where they suited the needs of his family and his land. He then spent ample time watching the effects of his work. So as Mr. Fury says, I enjoy harvesting water. Really, you know, when the rains fall and I see water running, I am running. Sometimes you will find me being very wet. To observe your sight, sit in the dust and dance in the rain. Through all of the seasons, you sit down, sit quietly, and turn yourself into a sponge. Listen with all of your senses, sight, smell, touch, hearing, taste, and your feelings. Observe all that's happening. Are there lush green areas where moisture naturally collects? Do you see bare spots where water and soil drain away? Is there running water? Is the water polluted? If the water is polluted, what's polluting it? Do trees grow straight, or are they bent, perhaps by strong prevailing winds? Is the soil underfoot washed out and hard-packed, or is it soft with accumulated organic matter? Can you hear the songs of birds and insects? Some such, as house finches and dragonflies, are never far from water. Where is the life? Where are the resources? Where is the erosion? Where is the water coming from? Where is the water going? How much water is there? So relax and be aware. After you've taken plenty of time to observe, contemplate why it is that things are as they are. Why is there erosion? Why does this plant grow here? Why is there moisture there? And try to understand your site, your land as a whole, not as separate pieces. Imagine what would happen if you changed something. How would that alter the dynamics of your site's water flow, wildlife paths, prevailing winds, and solar exposure? How would things improve? How would they get worse? You know, if you just listen, the land will tell you things that you need to know and what you need to investigate more seriously. Devoting your time to observation and then posing and answering questions are a good way to get to know the place. And once you connect to the place, it begins to show you its resources and challenges, and it helps guide your plans. Without understanding your site, you might install water harvesting earthworks and plant fruit trees in an exposed, wind-dried area far from the home where the runoff is lacking and fruit-eating wildlife abounds. You know, with better site understanding, you'd locate your water harvesting earthworks and trees where there is ample runoff, shelter from afternoon sun and prevailing winds. And then a gray water producing home are nearby, resulting in far more productive trees conveniently located for easy picking by people and less fruit eating by wildlife. The outcome is determined by how well you understand your site and how well you put things together. Let me show you a little story here. Out of Mr. Fury's house, he planted a vine. It's a passion fruit vine. Not a grapevine, but a passion fruit. So he collects the rainwater off of the roof of his house down into a concrete cistern. Now, this is what a cistern is a big tank. And you could buy these tanks, I guess, you know, if you wanted to. But you know, when you're poor, you know, you go out and gather some rocks and you make some mortar, and you mortar these rocks together to make a concrete cistern. Well, anyway, we made this big concrete cistern. Now, when the sun shines down onto this water, it evaporates. So, you know, he gets to looking at this, and he says to himself, well, let's see, the water runs off of my roof down into the gutters, down the downspouts, and into the cistern. And then it doesn't rain here for a month. And during the month, the sun shines. And as the sun is shining down onto my cistern, it evaporates the water. So he gets to mulling that over a little bit, and he says, what I need is to shade the cistern. So he says, well, I could build a roof over the cistern. That would shade it. But that costs a lot of money. And it doesn't feed me. My family can't eat the roof. So he gets mulling it over a little bit, and he says, I know what I'll do. I will plant some vines called passion fruit. Now, we like these passion fruits. And so he plants these vines around his concrete cistern, you know, outside the concrete wall. He builds a trellis up over, you know, the cistern, and he trains the plants to grow up over the top of the cistern. And they shade the cistern so that now when it rains, instead of half of the water evaporating in a month, it doesn't evaporate. And so he has twice as much water, twice as long. Now he has to water his passion fruits, so he takes the water out of his bathtub and his shower and out of his kitchen sink and his washing machine, and he channels that water around to the roots of his passion fruits so that the water he's using out of the cistern goes through the house, comes out and waters the roof that prevents the water from evaporating. And that's called rainwater harvesting. And it's all done by gravity flow. Isn't that amazing? Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. I'm going to cut it off right there. We'll be back with more next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.